Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming. I don't like to stand behind a podium, so I'll be moving just a little bit. So if I walk in front, no worries. This afternoon, I'm here to talk about Octane. Unfortunately, the name we really want to use, Car Shark, was used back in 2010, 2011 by some other researchers out on the West Coast. So we wanted to come up with another cool name, and Octane is the name that we came up with. So Open Car Testbed and Network Experiments. So you're saying, what is this, Chris, Octane? And how will it help me? Because I'm going to front load this to kind of let you know what's really cool about this. And it's a testbed used to test automobile security. And you're like, okay, great. Why is that important? Well, not only did those researchers back in 2010 and 2011 over in the West Coast show that you can hack into a car and take control of it, in fact, they had a video showing where they remotely unlocked the doors of a car, got in, started the car, and remotely unlocked it, remotely started it, someone locally got in and drove it away. So it does happen. Just a few weeks ago, Charlie Miller and a group that got research funding from DARPA showed at DEF CON out in Vegas the same thing with the 2010 Toyota Prius. Now keep that in mind, because I'm going to show you something I did with my 2010 Matrix in just a few moments. So it's here. People are hacking into cars, they're doing things, and what we're trying to do is provide a test bed to enable you to do that research. So you don't have to spend a year learning how to hack into a car, learning about OBD and CAN and LIN and FlexRay and all these different words and acronyms. So you can get in and start doing what you're good at, and that's security. So what we're trying to provide is a pathway with a software package and a hardware framework. So you can come in and say, okay, I want to test a LIN network. And what I have here is parts from a 2011 BMW X5. Everybody recognize it? It's your side mirror, right? So this is controlled through your controllers on your car door, right? You got the little thing and you click it. It may be down by your dash in some cars. All that goes through in the BMW through a LIN network, which is just one type of low-speed network, through what's called a footwell module. Don't ask me why they call it footwell module. No idea. That's just what BMW does. But it's basically a computer in here. You're welcome to come take this apart afterwards if you'd like. It's just a circuit board with some microprocessors in it, nothing fancy. But what we're trying to do is provide the software to help you hack into this, learn about it, and then develop security solutions so that we can make the cars more secure. And we do it two ways, with a software package, which I'll talk about in a bit, which is a GUI Windows C# written program. I'll talk a lot about that in a little bit and why it's really cool and how it will help you. And a hardware framework where we tell you, hey, you want to do research on a certain thing, you want to do a LIN network, here are the parts you can order, here's how you wire them together. And I'll talk more about that because it's not as easy as you think. You think, oh, I can order that, right? No. You get what you call up a BMW dealership, their parts division, and you say, I want the ECU that controls the side mirror. And they're going to say, you got a VIN number? You got a part number? And that's what they're set up to do. They're set up to take the VIN number, take the part number, and get you the hardware parts. You can't just call them. Trust me, I tried. It doesn't work. And so that's some of the challenges, and that's what we're trying to reduce that entry into the security testing field so that you don't have to spend a year, 6 months figuring it out how to get these parts. You can go jump in and say, oh, I got the parts, I'm wiring it together. This is how I can take control of the network. Now let me come up with security solutions. Can I put a firewall on there? Can I put intrusion detection? Can I encrypt the network? What can I do? And do what you're really good at, and that's security. We've been hearing about that all day. Y'all are experts at security, and that's what we're trying to do with Octane, is let you get to the security and not worry about a footwell module, because it's not fun, trust me. I spent the year figuring all this stuff out. And so that's really our goal. So turning back to the DEF CON presentation, and this is giving you an example of what we can do with our software. Charlie Miller, a couple of weeks ago, presented at DEF CON the hacking into a 2010 Toyota Prius. It was on the Today Show. I think Forbes did a video on it online. It's a lot of big news media. So, and last Monday, he published a paper outlining what they did. In that paper, they provided a whole lot of what we'll call CAN packets, and I'll give you examples in a little bit, showing how to take over parts of that 2010 Toyota Prius. So let me show you a video, what I did last week. Apologize, I'm not a professional videographer, but I tried to, you know, take over my 2010 Toyota Matrix. So my 2010 Toyota Matrix, me trying to walking out and doing it with this nice laptop with my software, Octane, with the software we developed, and a Kaiser CAN adapter. What we do is we plug into the OBD port under the dash. It's onboard diagnostic. All y'all have them on your cars. And you can see the engine is running. It was about 1,000 RPMs. I send one kill packet. Engine's dead. Zero RPMs. All the lights come on. I shut down the engine just by sending a CAN packet. And we also have the fuel gauge. Now, this is simplistic, but show you. A quarter of a tank is what it should have been. That's how much gas I had. So I sent an empty, sent a half, and every few seconds a new one, I think it's about every 10 seconds, a new one gets sent. See, three quarter, it'll go back down in a second, and then it'll go to full. And these are just one little packet you'll see in a second. So from Charlie Mills' paper, I used Octane, our software package, to simply code in the XML to say kill engine. That's all it took, is that one message with that ID, and bam, could kill the engine. Hey, Movie Maker did it all. I just used it.
Why not just use the command line stuff with good options?
Well, there are many options, and let me get to that, why our software package. The question was, is why don't we use one of the command line programs? And Charlie Miller, in fact, released their Python module-based thing. At the time we wrote the paper, there were no GUI-based tools that would do open source that would do what we want to do. But I'll get to that when you see the GUI, and you'll see what we tried to do. We tried to add more functionality than simply a command line. So this wasn't a simple, yeah, I can go type it in a command line and put basically the data you saw in the XML and kill the car. But our goal is to provide you something that is easy to use that you can replicate. So I can send that XML file to you. You can go to a 2010 Toyota, plug it in, boom, done. And all those codes work. So it's not a matter of you sitting there. It's everything can be done over and over again. So that's kind of what we took a step further. And this is a GUI-based program to help you reverse engineer and move forward. So we'll show that in a minute, more about that. So to back up a sec, you say, all of it's known, right? CAN is known. There's an international standard. LIN is known. FlexRay, all these things I'm talking about. And I'll show you example network on the next slide so you can see what those things are. All that's known. There's tons of CAN adapters. I've got multiple ones up here. Tons of them that you can buy, commercial off the shelf, right? You can get the parts, all commercial off the shelf. There's software for sending, for receiving the packets on a network. There's command line things. All those things are out there. But our goal was really to make a open source software package that focused in on security research so that we can see the packets, what's going on, identify what's going on. Because if you're getting, and I'll give you an example, of my 2010 Toyota Matrix, if I do a lock on the door lock, just like this adapter, which I misplaced, there it is. This doesn't actually have door locks, so, but if you do a door lock, there's between 75 and 100 CAN packets that come across the network. I want to be able to identify those and try to get down what's the one or two packets that make the door actually lock. And so what our software enables you to do is to identify those, and you can say, okay, well, this one's just a wake-up message. That's not important. And you'll see in a second when I show you the screenshot, you move forward with that. And so that's what we're trying to do, is help you reverse engineer it, help you figure out what's the good packet and what's the bad packet that doesn't matter.
So are these black box from the perspective of the ICs that are on the car? There are packets going across the network. I have no idea what the footwell module looks like.
Yep.
But I do see packet going here, packet going back. So that sounds like it's going to be really helpful when packets are, you know, just trivially, a packet with these bytes will turn things on, packet with these bytes will turn it off, but if any like first things happen, encrypting it in some way, it's going to be a lot harder to understand what's going on without looking into, okay, what's the code, like, what dump this, be ran from this IP, I don't know, stuff like that. So right now, is it just the network has packets going across, that nobody else is black box?
Well, let me go ahead and skip ahead to answer that question to the next slide, which actually is an example network, because I think that's important to kind of stage it. So what you see here is there's several different networks. Now, this is an example. One important thing is every car manufacturer does their network slightly different. What I've shown here is something that's kind of what BMW uses with FlexRay, which is a faster network. It's on the more of an order of like 10 megabits, where CAN is generally, a high-speed network on CAN is 500K per second. So it's slow in comparison. A LIN is much slower. There's actually a low-speed CAN that's only 33K. So we're not talking about super fast networks. Generally, there's a couple of questions, I think, in there. Generally, these networks are not encrypted. I haven't seen any that are. There's discussions about encrypting them, but I haven't seen any that are because there's not enough processing power in here, for one. There's just not, and there's, you know, let's say 20 to 40 of these in a car, and so if you added enough processing power to every single one of them, that's extra cost, and the car manufacturers don't want to go down that road. They may in the future, but right now, that's not really a solution. I believe this part was about $350, $400. I ordered it a while back, so I forget the exact cost. But generally, they're anywhere from $200 to $1,000. So, yeah, it adds up. And that's why we want to help with our hardware framework to have a budget. You say you got $2,000 to spend. What parts will get me the best network, you know, for $2,000 or whatever it may be? That's one of the things we want to help with because it adds up. We have actually a car door, a full car door for the BMW in our lab. They're actually pretty heavy, so it's mounted on a stand. And we got it didn't use for $500. Brand new, it was $1,000. And it did not include this or this. It didn't include most of the parts. It had the mirror and the engine and the motor for the engine and a lot of stuff. It actually had the airbag, but it didn't include everything that you would need. So there's a lot of things that go into that part of the hardware framework.
Just a little aside, the telematics, is that through the cellular?
It can do cellular, it can do anything like that. And I actually have one right here, so.
Did you ever find out how to figure out the cell number?
We haven't investigated that in our research. I know other researchers have looked at that, and there are ways. There's several papers on them. There's actually one paper about them looking at that.
There's a group in Netherlands. I believe that's the paper you're
talking about. It's not the one I'm thinking of, but I'm not surprised they've looked at it too.
And in this past year or earlier this year, the Netherlands group, and they covered up, they shielded their antenna, of course, it's
nice. Yeah. Yeah. We're purposely, what we were trying to do is set up a test bed and not actually hack into the car and learn that. That's our next step. And then our final step, hopefully, will be figuring out solutions to solve the problems with security issues. So turning back to the network, one of the answer to the prior question is what we generally tap into, and you don't have to, is we tap into what's called the OBD port, the onboard diagnostic. It's federally mandated. All cars sold in the US have them. Generally across the globe, they have them. And it's just the port you plug into. And for example, this adapter, we have a USB connector we can plug into the laptop. And this little beauty circuitry translates the CAN messages. You can see here it's on the CAN network. It translates the CAN messages to something the computer can understand, and then the software can translate to something we can read. So generally, not all the time, but generally all the traffic on that CAN network, so all those parts that are talking, it's going across the OBD network. So when the car's running, you're getting thousands and thousands of messages a minute. I mean, like I said, with the car off, a simple lock sends anywhere from 75 to 100 messages. So, there's a lot of messages to reverse engineer and to figure out. A lot of people have different ways. They've done statistical analysis to say, okay, we are expecting these packets, so what are these packets doing? There's only one of these. It must be special. Let's figure it out. And there's thousands of these, so maybe they're just status messages. And so there's different ways to do that. And hopefully that's the next step, so we can all start learning more about the car networks and how they work. But hopefully that answers your question. If you're connected to the OBD port, you're not necessarily going to get any messages from here, unless the body control unit or in this case for the BMW, the footwell module, because every manufacturer has slightly different terminology, happens to relay those messages across the CAN network, which does happen sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. It just depends on the car. What you could do is tap right into the LIN network, though. And there are other people who've done that. They tap right into the networks right there to try to go that route. The time, I'm just going to continue forward. So we touched on a lot of the issues with security, trying to automobile security to figure out what's going on. Yeah, I'm going to go a little faster because I have 10 minutes left. And basically, what Octane's trying to do is provide you a framework to do it. And so let me show you what that is. Again, software package and hardware framework. I'm going to give you more details in the next few slides. The software package, what we've done is we've with the architecture of our software package, what we've done is really two layers to do it. We have XML files that we bring in. You saw the end of the XML file at the end of my video. Our goal there is simply to have something that can be used by anyone. So you can put in all those codes for the Toyotas, and I can send it out to California, to some other group, and they can test it and see if it works. If I figured out how to program, for example, the ECU, and that takes quite a bit of different coding. You know, the engine kill was easy. It was one packet. If you want to reprogram this thing, there's a lot of back and forth that has to go on. So our goal with the XML is you can put all that back and forth in the XML, share it with other researchers or with students or whoever it may be who's working on it with you, and then be able to reprogram this control unit. And so that's really what's there. We also have a layer for the hardware. One of the things we understand is not everyone can afford the different CAN adapters. These things range from a couple $100 to $1,000. So if you're on a limited budget, maybe you want the cheaper CAN adapter. You see there's a lot of different ones. So we purposely built the software where you can very easily, down there in the hardware middle layer, add the references to the API for this adapter or this adapter or this adapter. And it's a piece of cake to do that, so if you want to extend it. And by us releasing it open source, you are able to do that. So the XML automation. Currently, it's really simple. You just have your packet, your names for display purposes. And really, the meat of it is the ID, which in the short version of CAN is only 11 bits. And the extended version is 29 bits. So it's really small. And the message, which is 0 to 8 bytes. So these CAN packets are very small in that regard. They're not what you may be used to. And that's one of the difficulties in reverse engineering is there's a lot of them. We have many future improvements that we think will really help out. You know, wild cards, the response, the back and forth. So if you see a certain message, you can it automatically will just respond to it. And that's really important in like the reprogramming and different things. So to get to the meat of the question earlier about why not just use the text version, well, this is really a GUI. So what we're meant to do is this is fake network traffic, but fake network traffic. What the XML now enables you to do is two things. You can send out the XML, and that's what I did for the engine stop. It'll also identify things. So right here, stop network communication 210, and that's the ID. And you see the data down there, 10.4a, it said, so if you've got 100 packets sitting there, like the lock unlock, you got 100 packets, it'll automatically tell you, hey, question mark, we don't know what this is, you might need to figure it out. Hey, we know what that's stop network communication. So you probably don't need to worry about, well, that means the car won't start, but because it shuts down all communication on the CAN network. But it may be something as a hello packet or a hello response packet, and you don't have to worry about it in your reverse engineering per se. You know, you can go off and try to find that lock packet or that seed packet, which is the seed trying to, for example, reprogram the ECU. And so that's really what the heart of why we're trying to develop something that enables you to reverse engineer, make it easier. And the important thing is out of all that data, the only part of the CAN packet is the 210 DLC, which is simply the length to 2 bytes of the data. And so we're trying to give a lot of data. We're trying to provide an add-on, say, once you've figured out that 210.10.4a is the hello packet, put in the XML, And then when you see it in the future, it's identified there, and you don't have to worry about it again. You won't be struggling with a sheet of paper, because I've been there, when you're writing down, okay, 10-4A, that's this. Okay, what's 210? It's this, and so forth and so on. So we're just trying to make life easier. The second part of the XML, and I'm running short on time, is the custom transmit. So not only does the XML identify what's coming in, the transmission allows you to send it back out. So what you see here is stop network communication. Very easy to send. You click on it, you hit transmit on whatever transmit interface you want, it gets sent out to the CAN network. Now this enables you to start testing things and say, oh, will it actually stop? With the real stop network communication packet, that's not the actual one that works on any car, but the real one, I can plug it into a running car and everything on your dash shuts down, the engine will start going and it just, the network dies. It will come back up if you allow it to, but basically every ECU on the network, on that CAN bus that we looked at earlier, will shut down communication on the CAN network. So, you know, those are different things you can play with and do. So moving to the hardware, we're not having any hardware that, for example, that you could say, one click order from us and here's your hardware. What we're trying to do is more of a, you know, a hardware framework, more of a wiki type thing where you can say, you know what, I want to have a LIN network and experiment with it, and you know, you look online, you say, okay, well these three parts will do that for you. You can wire them up, and you can play with turning your mirror different ways with this. So you don't have to go spend months tracking down which BMW dealership will sell you the parts. We're gonna provide it at some point when we release our website, and you know, it'll tell you this. So if you wanna do LIN, here you go. And here are the different providers of LIN interfaces. That network interface that you can tap into it and try to help out so that you can, like I said, spend your time on network security, computer security issues, and not trying to get these parts. So that's really all the hardware framework part of it is guidance. For the real world test setup, now this is really hard because there are certain things I will not test on my own vehicle. I just won't do some of the braking things. I just won't do it. It's my car. I'll do the gas gauge. I'll do the engine stop. I've, you know, tested lock, unlock, you know, but I won't do anything like try to reprogram my ECU, you know, that kind of stuff. We tried a lot of other vehicles just testing certain things, but there's still a line with where we will go. To what we do. So that's what we're trying to do is guidance so you can test certain things. But again, our problem's always gonna be is you kinda need a car you can brake. And so we're gonna try to provide that guidance of, you know, this is what you can do, this is how you can get a car to do these tests on. And hopefully guidance on, I know we're hopefully, my university, GM George Mason, is hopefully getting a car that we, next semester or two, that we can brake. And that we can actually do some of the destructive testing on. A lot of the other groups have done it.
What do you do when you break it?
You try to fix it. Well, there's certain things that you're just not gonna test. For example, in the Charlie Miller presentation, they had a 2010 Toyota Prius that they could brake. And so what they did was there was a parking assist in that car. My car doesn't have it, and their car has a parking assist to help you parallel park. So you can, what they showed in their video is they can jerk the steering wheel. All right, well, going 50 miles per hour down the road, I'm not about to jerk the steering wheel on my car or anybody else's car that I know. So if that breaks, I don't want it to be a car that I care about, you know, in that type of brake things. You can also try to, if you try to reprogram an ECU, you can actually brick it. And I know other researchers that I've spoken to that brick ECU after ECU after ECU, just trying to pull the code out. So, you know, there's different things.
I think part of the question is, we need test beds. We're in the test bed session.
Yep.
Right? You know, is there enough that we can do to have repeatability in test beds without just, you have one car, you break it once, and now you need a whole new one? I mean, we're trying to get to a point where we have some shared common infrastructure around testing.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's really where the lab network setup is, so that we can say, here's a common LIN setup. for you to do testing on. Here's a common flex ray setup for you to do testing on. And there's very few vehicles, for example, that implement flex ray, which is a very fast protocol. BMW has it in their 2011 X5. And so that's the type of that people are going to be able to do to, you know, have this test bed. We know that, hey, you're running that LEND test bed that the Octane people talk about, and this is what they're doing.
So one challenge in the lab, in the test network kind of setup, is that some of these ECUs are fine to evaluate in isolation. You send them a message, they will respond organically the way they would in a vehicle. But a number of them actually have a lot of complicated interaction modes within each other. So certainly, for example, anti-lock brakes and stability control and throttle all want to talk to one another. And so there, if you just have the one, in fact, you may not even get it to initialize correctly because it is not seeing what it expects to see on the bus. Have you thought at all about the possibility of creating limited car emulators where you would record from a real vehicle, here is startup behavior, here is behavior under braking and so forth, and then you would just have some programs, so you didn't have to buy all the different units, you could buy the one, but have software modules that would stand in to get something closer to the real experience of having the vehicle?
A couple of answers to that question. One, from the strictly software side, we've talked about having pretty integrated XML files. They'd be pretty big, but have some type of part in them that could, you know, just simply list what we expect to see on a network with this type of thing. It'd be very easy to record, implement it on that, and send it over so that that ECU, that brake, you know, the ABS ECU, for example, is seeing what it expects to see in the network. So we have discussed that. On the more hardware side, we haven't gone down that road where you could, for example, have some type of hardware emulation of that. You know, I think it's two different things. The software side, I think you could do, but there are limitations. You know, because it's going to be strictly a playback type of thing. So,
have you looked into collaborating with any automotive engineering departments? A lot of universities do a lot. They may have already systems, subsystems, test beds, all these things ready and waiting.
Yeah, we've looked at that a little. Most of the test beds we've seen has been more for the mechanical side. There's a ton of test beds for mechanical side, and for the parts and that kind of stuff. But we haven't seen any for the network side of it. If you know of any, you know, please let us know. And I know the other researchers I've spoken to and my co-author, Dr. McCoy, have spoken to, we're just not aware of any of the university side of the that are going that route. Because most of them are, from my experience, are more the mechanical, the aerospace, and that kind of stuff. So I think it would be a great synergy if we could figure out how to, you know, put it all together. So
once people start using this and start breaking some cars and hacking into some cars, do you think the supply of parts from the automakers is going to get cut off, or you're going to lose the ability to collaborate with any other automotive departments that might be in the industry?
Well, two questions there. The first question, I think, is can we get the parts? You can always get the parts. There's always an auto dealer, a salvage yard, someone who will give you the parts. So I think even possibly by law, don't hold me to that, they can't, you know, you're going to be able to go to AutoZone, and or not that AutoZone sells these, but for example, you know, the local parts guy and get the parts. But on the second question really is if, for example, the mechanical engineering group is collaborating with Toyota, and they find out we're breaking them, are they going to have issues? I think maybe, but from my experience so far, the automobile manufacturers want to be involved. They want their cars to be more secure. So they want kind of that dialogue. They want to move forward. Having said that, I don't think they necessarily want everything published, but they want their cars to be secure. So.
We have time for one more quick question. So if they want their cars to be more secure, why don't they show it, like, bring people in to audit the source code and look at it from that side? Because when you think about reverse engineering, it's really common that, okay, well, some malware author wrote a botnet client, and we can reverse engineer that in order to figure out how to defend against it or detect it or whatever, or check out some information on those lines. But the
Toyota. You know, the government wants them to have safe cars. And so I can't. So would a policy-based way to combat this problem maybe be a bit more efficient, where you guys are working so hard at coming up with this test bed, and you're breaking ECU, you got to go buy another one. Maybe just going to the source where the source literally exists and saying, okay, let's actually perform some sort of security audit here and build up from that. It seems like it is an adversarial relationship between yourself and the car makers, but it shouldn't necessarily be that way.
Yeah, and that's a very good question. And part of it is the history of the car manufacturers. There's many answers to that question. Part of it is from my understanding, the car manufacturers aren't producing, for example, the software that goes on the CCU. There's some third-party contractor that there's, you know, specs that are out there, and they're producing the software that goes on here. And from other papers I've read with people who have experimented with it, with different models, is maybe 2010 was produced by that third party, and they've reverse-engineered it and figured it out. 2011 is produced by somebody else. And so the car manufacturers aren't necessarily, and I think the point is they should push it down and make that type of audit happen. And I was just a couple months ago at S-Car, which is a conference that's in Detroit and in Germany, in Europe every year, and that was the big discussion. There was a lot of car manufacturers there, and that's what they were discussing. How do we take those next steps to secure? But the problem right now is the way the supply chain and the systems are set up, it's not something that can just be done. You know, they're basically going, I'm not going to say the lowest bidder, but they're going to whoever has the best deal for them.
Chad, I'll go into that. The assumption that they have access to the source code is false.
Yeah.
The car maker or the car manufacturer does not have access to the vast majority of code that comes in there.
All right, I think this weekend should.